Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
She did not care what people thought
of
Athena
Lee. See, that's the way to do it. You've got to not care what people think.
Exactly. And she was living her best life.
She was the roar of the roaring 20s.
She totally was, yeah. It's punk rock, but with feather boas and fragrance.
I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but very occasionally I'll be walking along somewhere and I'll get a whiff of something, a smell, and it's so profound, it's so familiar, it's so triggering of a specific memory, but I don't quite know what that memory is. I don't know whether it's the memory of a person or a place, and yet it's incredibly familiar. There has been a sort of a break between the smell and what that smell reminds me of. It's really frustrating. I get it, not often, but occasionally. And I don't know how common that is. I don't know whether this is other people suffer from that affliction or whether it's just me. But today's episode is kind of all about that. It's all about smell and about perfume in particular, which is ironic because right now I have a terrible, terrible cold and can't smell anything and I'm completely bunged up. So my apologies. Anyway, welcome, friends. Welcome back to Patented, my podcast, all about the history of inventions and other cultural stories from History Hit. I'm your host, Dallas Campbell. Apart from my little affliction, scent is really, really important. And I feel it takes, or is thought to be taking second fiddle to other senses, to sight and sound. But it's so important. It is the invisible backdrop to our lives. Fragrances are time machines. Anyone who's read Proust will know that. À la recherche du temps perdu, In Search of Lost Time, and the famous scent of the Madeleine cakes. Scents and fragrances transport us back to people and to places and to objects and to occasions and to the memories of our lives. And it's a very, very powerful thing. And yet scents is fleeting. They can be elusive and jarring all at the same time. We fall in love to scents. We are repulsed by smell. Smells whet our appetite and they feed our other desires. Anyway, on with the show. We're going to be talking about a particular perfume, specifically the most iconic perfume of all time, and that is Chanel No. 5, which is the perfume that changed the world. So we're going to be going back to the 1920s. The 1920s, a world that was in upheaval. The old social mores were being ripped up by the bright young things. Politics was all over the place. Fashion was changing. The world was changing. And at the centre of this revolution was Paris. And in the heart of Paris, there was one particular character, and her name was Coco Chanel. My guest today is Susie Nightingale, an award-winning writer on perfumes and the co-host of the really wonderful podcast On the Scent. It's great. Enjoy the show. Hey, welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome, Susie Nightingale.
Hi.
Hey, it's great to have you. I love your podcast, by the way. It's funny because...
Thank you so much.
You sent me a really nice message on social media saying hello. And then I started listening to your podcast. And it reawakened my interest in scents and things. And I can't remember when it was. Years and years ago, I wrote when I was doing Bangos of Theory.
which was a science program, I did a thing all about yes. scent and how scent works from a neuroscience, psychological point of view.
God, I'm so fascinated by that because it's something that really scientists have only just recently started paying attention to.
Yeah.
Because people thought it wasn't really that important, your sense of smell. And when you actually dig down and realise how connected we are to it, how much we use it without realising it, it just blows my mind, and it's one of the reasons
it
I
is
love
really
it so
interesting.
Much.
You're right. I think we kind of, against sight and hearing, it always plays second fiddle a little bit.
Yeah.
But it is this invisible kind of canvas on which all our lives are projected. And there's also that, obviously, we might talk a little bit about this, the memory sense of it, you know, the Proustian,
yes.
à la recherche du temps perdu. Is that how you pronounce it? I can never remember.
I mean, it
you know,
sounded
the Madeleine,
great to me.
The Madeleine Cates.
Yes, exactly. That sort of time travel moment thing, yeah. where you, and I'm sure we've all had this experience, if you walk past someone in the street and they're wearing a fragrance of someone that you perhaps used to date or that your mother wore, and suddenly you are propelled back.
Yes.
to the exact last time you saw them, and you can remember what you were wearing and what the weather was like and things that you've never thought about for years.
Yeah,
and years.
Like, do you remember that advert in the 80s? You weren't around in the bloody 80s.
I was around in the 80s.
It was for impulse.
Kind of
it was, do you remember the woman with,
oh,
it was a
God,
bit creepy.
Yes. Men can't help acting on impulse. Dodge. Yeah, it was slightly, they wouldn't have it now, would they? We've moved on since those times. Also, yeah, I think impulse body spray was tended to be worn by, well, certainly in my school, by girls.
Oh.
You know, in the yeah. gym, in the shower afterwards, it's the kind of Lynx equivalent.
Yeah. Oh my God, the Lynx. There is something truly foul about going into
locker rooms.
Sorry, James, my teenage son. I'm not talking about you, but you go into kind of teenage boys' bedroom, and it reeks of what is it about Lynx?
Well, I have to interject at this point and say that the fragrance we were chatting a bit beforehand, the fragrance that your lovely producer Freddie admitted wearing was
Freddie.
Lynx.
Are you a Lynx? You're not a Lynx guy, are you? Crikey. Why? But
that's, and also something that I was telling Freddie is, so I mean, okay, we might not say that it's the most sophisticated of fragrances perhaps, but Lynx Africa, it was created by one of the most incredible perfumers in the world, Francis Kurjan, and he has just now gone in to be in-house perfumer at Dior.
You're kidding. Well, that's interesting. So actually behind the Lynx thing that makes me want to vomit is a sophisticated scent.
Yes, you have perfumers behind all of these. You know, if there is a fragrance in something, it would have been created by a perfumer. And yes, you know, things like that are much more functional and they're very low cost. So it's perhaps not using the most expensive ingredients in the world. But those perfumers have to be trained. They train longer than doctors and scientists. They train longer than a surgeon because they have to do a chemistry degree and then they train as a perfumer for 6 years.
It's really interesting. So they understand the chemistry of it. Do perfumers understand? And just while we're on the subject of memory and smell and that transformative thing, from my own memory, smell kind of transcends the kind of outer bits of the brain and goes straight to the kind of middle of the brain. I forget which bit. Do I mean the amygdala? Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, it's the amygdala. So, and it's also the part of your brain that is closest to the outside world because it's sort of halfway up our nose, is part of our brain. And it's just plugged directly into the limbic system, which is where memories are stored and where emotional responses are stored. So that's why smell can time travel so instantaneously.
When we get that smell, it's not like we have to kind of think it or process that thought. It's that instant.
It bypasses
logic.
Yeah, totally. It goes straight to your gut almost. And of course, we now know that we also have a brain in our stomach as well.
Maybe I do have a brain in my stomach.
Do you not?
Well, yes, I know that gut feeling. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny actually. So I get it when Elnett hairspray. It's in the gold can.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Well, a couple of things. First of all, if you look on the can itself, there's a portrait of a woman. And that woman is the mother of a friend of mine. That's my claim to fame.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, but also I think maybe my grandmother used Elnett or...
Yeah, My mother used it. It's very, I associate it with her going out. So it's sort of very glamorous smell. It's a sort of forbidden smell of womanhood that I could only hope to attain. You know, that sort of impossible glamour and beauty and all of these accoutrements and things that they're using and makeup and clothes and suddenly looking not like your mother, but like an actual human being who's going out, which is always really weird to see.
Also, every makeup person who does works in telly or film uses Elmed. It's just the kind of every time I go in and get the makeup done for things, it's I get transported back to my granny's boudoir. But anyway, smells generally, we could talk about smell and memory forever. We'll get on to talking about what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about the invention of Channel 5, as I call it.
Channel 5.
Chanel 5. Which is such a groundbreaking in the sort of pantheon of perfumes, Chanel No. 5. Am I right in thinking that's the kind of, that's the one that everything is measured against?
It's the sort of birth of modern perfumery, certain modern mass perfumery, because suddenly perfume ingredients were much more affordable. So you didn't have to be uber rich to afford a perfume. And you also didn't have to, you could buy it off the shelves. You didn't have to go to a perfumer and request a bespoke fragrance.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, just tell us in the day, so we're talking sort of 1920. So if we go back in time a bit, I mean, obviously people wore perfumes to cover bad smells. And when did it kind of move from being just a thing to disguise bad smells into something more psychological, a brand, if you like?
Yeah, I think really the Victorian era, you started having perfume brands, and that was the kind of the start of it. You would still have people making their own fragrances at home. So you would have a cook would also make fragrances. They'd make an eau de cologne, but these very much sort of to do with cleanliness. Eau de colognes were originally drunk for health because they were in alcohol. So you'd have a little tipple to make you feel good, and then you'd just splash some on as well. But yeah, in the Victorian era, you had the birthplace of, you know, these incredible houses, some of which are still around today. In the UK, we've still got florists, we've still got Penhaligon's, and that's when they were starting. Mm. And they were appealing to the sort of middle classes as well as the upper classes, because they could suddenly afford to buy a fragrance. And they weren't in crystal bottles decorated with rubies and things, which you would have had your own a jeweler make your perfume bottle, and then you would take that to your perfumer before that and have them create something amazing for you.
And what were perfumes made of then? I mean, in talk about perfumiers, what kind of materials would they be using?
I mean, they're using things that we're still using today, but they were only using naturals before the Victorian era, basically, because that's all they obviously had access to. You've got, you know, anything along the spice route. So you've got exotic ingredients, you've got ambergris, and you've got all of these incredible spices and things from around the world. But again, obviously, they were hugely expensive to import.
Yes, I remember I read a thing about ambergris, which is whale vomit. Is it whale something?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's often referred to. It's not actually vomit. It's that basically all the bits that are crushed up from cuttlefish that they regurgitate. So it's not actually vomit. Like an owl pellet, basically.
An underwater owl pellet.
Underwater owl pellets. And I've never got to the bottom of who was the first person to smell this thing, which is washed up on a beach, and then think, oh, I'll pop that in a perfume.
Yeah, it's one of those really weird... But also, it's incredibly expensive. It's more expensive than gold or some ridiculous thing.
Oh, massively. Yeah, I work for the Perfume Society in the UK, and we had someone ring us up once and say that they'd found this lump of what they thought was ambergris, because it looks a bit like a pebble or something on a beach. And it was in Ireland. There's a few beaches in Ireland where it often washes up, something to do with the tidal patterns, I guess. And he and his son had been playing football with what they thought was this weird light pebble. And then he thought, I'll take it home and investigate it. And there's this test you can do with a hot needle and all these things to ascertain whether it is actually ambergris. And he said, I think it is. And it had started off as a massive lump. And by the time they'd finished playing football, it was quite small. We worked out that if he had not played football with it and kept it as a massive lump, it would have been worth about £500,000.
You are kidding.
No.
Oh, my God. How much did he get for it?
It was like several £1,000s.
Yeah, but that's really...
Yeah. Look at what you could have won.
Beachcombers should look out for ambergris just in case. Yeah, it's one of those weird things. Like, you know, how did anyone
like musk from, and civet from musk deers, which is they use, I mean, it's synthesized now, but in the olden days they used to squeeze this gland behind a musk deer's anus.
It's, we all do that. I mean, we've all been there.
I mean, you know, we've all been there, haven't we? And just to see if it smells.
I've got
nice.
A squirrel that visits me every day, and
well, have a go. I mean, that's what you do in your spare time, Dallas, is entirely up to you.
Okay, so we've got these sort of weird and wonderful ingredients that goes into perfumes, and yes, let's propel ourselves into the worlds of flappers and bright young things.
Yeah, and I think it was such a revolutionary time. It's difficult to put ourselves in that. And I think the only thing that we can liken it to, perhaps, is sort of punk rock.
That's my era.
How shocking that was. Yeah, you go. These women who were cutting their hair and wearing trousers and smoking in the street were just seen as absolutely outrageous, the antithesis of what a young lady should be. It's kind of the birthplace of teenagers as well. They were wearing their own fashions. They weren't just mini adults, you know, they weren't just wearing cut down versions of what their parents were wearing. They were suddenly wearing something that was really different, completely different to the sort of corseted fashions of previous eras. And yeah, they were dancing on tables.
And what year were we here? So this is post First World War.
Yeah, so very early of the new century. And there's a brilliant book called Flappers by the author Judith Mackrell, if you want to read more about that era, which I think just really explains perfectly how shocking this was. And she's got pictures from contemporary newspapers of parents who were terribly worried about their children, their girls especially, who were cutting their hair and sort of rouging their cheeks and rolling their stockings down and showing their knees.
Disgusting.
I mean, outrageous.
Outrageous. So actually, just for the word flapper, we should explain. I don't know. Does everyone know what flappers are? I don't know. Tell us about flappers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the etymology of the word, but certainly the high couture of this time, you know, the fashion that everyone wanted to follow started in Paris. And it was Parisian women going to nightclubs, staying out late, having their own money as well. They don't have to ask their husbands or their father's permission.
Yeah. So this is feminism 1.0. revolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of starting,
exactly.
Which brings us to the great name of the era, Coco Chanel.
Yeah.
Tell us who Coco Chanel was. What's her background and how did she get caught up in this world?
So she came from an incredibly humble background. Her mother was a washerwoman, basically, who did laundry for people. And we don't know how, but her mother died when Chanel was very young. So Chanel was sent to live with Cistercian nuns at a convent, and she grew up in their convent school. And from there, and there's sort of sketchy details of her early life. But yeah, it was very humble beginnings. But from an early age, she seems to have been very rebellious. And she cut her hair. She was one of the first women to be seen with short bobbed hair. And she would smoke. And she liked doing, she was very sporty. So she liked outdoor life. She was, you know, she liked going to the races and gambling. And she would often be seen at the races wearing what were ostensibly men's clothes at that time. So she would go to the races. All the other women are still in their ostrich plumes and corsets. And there she is. And she kind of looks a bit like a tomboy, and she's cut her hair, and she's wearing a sailor's shirt, you know, and trousers. And people started thinking, who is this woman? Because she was so confident about it somehow. There's a wonderful chapter in Cecil Beaton's book, The Glass of Fashion, talking about the fact that revolutionary people in the fashion or in art, you have to do it with a confidence and aplomb. That's how you become a leader.
Yes.
You know, you're not following anyone else. You're just being completely outrageous. And eventually, if you do it well enough and for long enough, people start taking notice of you and thinking, who is this woman? So people started going to her for style advice, basically, and saying, where did you get that shirt? And she'd sort of dress them. And she turned this, she started out doing hats, actually, and opened a tiny little boutique selling hats. That was a roaring success. And then she sold that and went into bigger premises and started designing fashion. And these fashions were, as I say, they'd just not been seen on women before. So she take the sort of silhouette of a sailor's trousers and she'd put women in those, or the stripy tops, which we still wear today, the Breton tops.
All the This month on Gone Medieval from History Hit, I'll be asking, who really were the Vikings? How did they become so successful in spreading across Northern Europe and beyond from the late 8th to the 11th centuries? What are the stories we tell about them, and what legacy did they leave behind for us today? I'm Dr. Kat Jarman, and throughout September, I'll be examining the big questions about the Vikings with a host of experts and answering all of your burning questions about the Viking Age as well. So, for everything you always wanted to know about the Vikings, subscribe to Gone Medieval from History Hit, wherever you get your podcasts.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Well, that's it. When you mention that sort of Breton style, I think of Jean-Paul Gaultier, who reinvented the Breton style in the 1990s, suddenly became fashionable.
Exactly. We're still wearing those, but she was the first person to popularise that in fashion. And also ready-to-wear clothes as well, that you didn't have to go to a couturier and or a tailor and have, again, hugely expensive outfits made. And she was dressing people, she was styling them. People wanted to be like her, basically. So she had a brand. And part of that brand was she wanted to do a perfume. And of course, it wasn't going to be like the perfumes that had gone before, because talking about the Victorian and the Edwardian eras, women then were supposed to smell like flowers, like nature, just like a posy of violets or a little a rose on a bush, you know, something delicate and lovely.
So the scent reflected the sort of mores of fashion and respectability and how and women's place in society.
Yeah, exactly. And there's whole codes, there's whole, you know, what the Victorians were like. There's books about, you know, what perfumes are acceptable to wear depending on what class you are and what colour your hair is and what outfit you're wearing. And you wouldn't put perfume directly on your skin because that basically marked you out as a whore. You would have it on your handkerchief or you would scent a scarf with perfume, but you wouldn't.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I could tell that from you. No, well, I didn't. I wouldn't think that of you, Dad.
Can I just actually just while I'm on the subject of that, she had a pretty fruity. I was reading a little bit about it. She took many lovers.
She certainly did.
She was a lady,
and
but
publicly.
Also she was a mistress publicly. There was no kind of hiding it. She just basically
no. She did not care what people thought.
See, that's the way to do it. You got to not care what people think.
Exactly. And she lived her, as we would say now, she was living her best life.
She was the roar of the roaring 20s.
She totally was, yeah. And again, it's punk rock, but with feather boas and fragrance. And that's what I think she was doing. You know, it was shocking. People were gasping in the street if you walked past someone, a woman in a sailor's top and trousers who was smoking and wearing her first fragrance, which was, as we know, Chanel No. 5.
So, okay, well, this is a good place to start. So she'd fashion, she's a badass. We've established that. She had many lovers. Excellent.
Many.
We love all of this. This is terrific. So she suddenly thinks, you know what? I'm going to redefine. Did she decide, I want to redefine perfume? How did she get into perfume?
She basically wanted to redefine how women smelled because she realised that that was something that just hadn't been catered for. Women were still...
Why was she so obsessed by smell particularly? What was it about smell that
I don't know. I mean,
I've
read theories that she wanted this sort of soapy smell, and a lot of people theorise that that's because, you know, her mother was a laundry woman and she grew up surrounded by soap, and that was a very nostalgic scent for her. She was incredibly superstitious as well. So she had all these horoscopes done and would go to fortune tellers and things like that and do the runes. But she, I think she just realised that she didn't want to dress a certain way. And smell is so evocative of your personality. It's such an expression of who you are outwardly to the world. As you say, it's this invisible accessory. So if you are wearing very modern clothes and you've got a modern haircut and you're living this modern life, but you smell like your grandmother, it doesn't fit.
It doesn't work.
And she realised that she wanted it to be the whole package. So she was shunning those, oh, I'm smelling like a rose bush and a bunch of violets and lily of the valley. And she wanted something completely different. And so she met with this perfumer, who was friend of her Russian lover, the Grand Duke Dmitry Pavlovich. And there was a perfumer called Ernest Beau, and he had been hanging around with the kind of rich and famous. He was a kind of perfumer for hire. And he would travel the world making friends with the rich and famous and making bespoke fragrances for them. And he was also something of a revolutionary in that he was rejecting old-fashioned perfumery techniques. He was really interested in the synthetic ingredients that were beginning to be available. So these are things that had never been used before. They had never been discovered before. So things like you could extract coumarin, vanillin, all of a sudden aldehydes.
Yes, aldehydes is one of these things we hear a lot about in modern perfumes. Is that the same as, like, I think of formaldehyde? Is that an aldehyde? What is an aldehyde? And when did we go from natural things to synthesize things? Like, what happened? Was there a kind of moment where things switched?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's the late 1800s, they were starting to be discovered, but they kind of didn't know what to do with them. They just knew that these were new smells, so that you could, in a laboratory, you could extract from a natural ingredient a molecule that doesn't actually smell like the ingredient that it came from. So they're kind of new chemicals.
Am I right in thinking part of the sort of exploration of these new chemicals was about longevity, whereby natural scents would disappear in an hour if you kind of rub a bit of lavender
exactly.
on yourself or whatever, it would go in an hour, whereas these would last for hours and hours and hours.
Exactly. And hours. So you can still buy all natural perfumes now, and in some ways there's a kind of return to that with a lot of the sort of millennial and Gen Zs looking for all natural things. However, I'm totally of the same opinion. Oh my God, don't even get me started. Yeah, I don't like chemicals. Well, you're out of luck because everything is chemicals, including the oxygen you're breathing, but okay. But yeah, natural ingredients, you're absolutely right. If you have an all-natural fragrance, it will disappear in a couple of hours at most. And also, it smells kind of... There's something happens with perfumery. When you have these synthetic ingredients, it kind of gives a structure, a backbone, a skeleton to a fragrance so that you can then use naturals within that, but they will all kind of separate and you can build things more rather than just whacking them all in and stirring them.
So she's got her... What's his name?
Ernst Beau. Beau.
That's the name for a perfumer.
Absolutely.
So they get together and they go, come on, we're going to do something
brilliant. Yeah, exactly. And she said she wanted a fragrance. She actually said, the scent of a woman, but not a woman of the previous century, rather than a posy of flowers. So she wanted something clean, pared back, stripped down, that didn't smell like anything else. And Chanel No. 5, I think the reason it's still popular today, over 100 years after it was first introduced, is that it doesn't smell, it's really difficult to describe. So you smell it and it's, although it's got rose and jasmine in it, you kind of don't smell them because of these aldehydes. It's almost like the pop of a champagne cork. It's this fizz, this explosion of sort of freshness and bubbles. And that goes throughout the fragrance that's really long lasting, but it also smells of soap. It smells clean. It smells of sort of when you've just got out the shower and your skin is still wet and you smell slightly of soap, but slightly of you. So your skin's natural muskiness, but cleanliness, and then, yeah, champagne bubbles and fizz and weirdness.
I love that. You describe it so beautifully. I wonder if there's, how did Ernst Beau and Coco Chanel get to this kind of, and also how do you make something that no one's smelled
right,
before?
Exactly.
It's almost like playing a chord on the piano that no one's heard before.
Exactly. That's always what I liken it to. It's like saying to an artist, oh, P.S., I've just invented a colour that's never been seen before. Here you go. Or to a musician saying, oh, here's a chord that's never been heard before. What do you think you can do with that? That's how exciting these synthetic molecules were. And that when they were experimenting, and Ernst Beau was doing this a lot before he started working for Chanel, he worked for a Russian house and he was actually scenting the Russian royal family. But he was making things that were just a bit weird for them. So he started using aldehydes in 1913. And there was a Russian house that he made a fragrance for called the Bouquet of Catherine. And it just didn't sell because people thought, what the bloody hell is this? It's weird. It smells like, I don't know, going into space or something. And it smelled cold. A lot of fragrances at the time, you wanted to evoke warmth and a sort of a generous, gentle feeling. And a cold fragrance is so, it's weird to think of a smell in terms of temperature, but that's what aldehydes bring to a fragrance. It is definitely cold. It's almost metallic and silvery. So he was playing around with these already, but it had not been commercially successful. I think he was just way ahead of his time. So it was kind of a really happy meeting of these two revolutionary spirits who wanted to do something really different. And working with Chanel, he put loads of these aldehydes into the fragrance, and that's really what gave it its signature.
Okay, why five? Why Chanel five? Was there a kind of, was it like we're going to, was there a four?
Yes.
We didn't like Chanel number four.
When,
we didn't like Chanel number six.
Exactly that.
Where did number five come from? Why five?
So five was Chanel's lucky number. As I say, she was very superstitious and she had a thing about the number five, that it was really important to her. And so whether or not that led her into smelling the fifth one and going, that's the one, we don't know. She says not. She says it was a happy coincidence. You know, it was her lucky number and that was the one. But yeah, so when perfumers work for whoever they're creating the fragrance for, they will submit a number of different variations of that fragrance for them to smell and to narrow down. And they will just number them. They won't have names. So that's still what perfumers do today. And so I think he did something like one to number 24, something like that. We have no idea what the others smelled like, just that number five was the one that she smelled and went, that's the one.
And I suppose the question, like you say, it's been going for 100 years now. It's still, when you say name a perfume, everyone's going to name Chanel number five. What's given it its appeal? Is it the smell or is it the branding? Because it seems so much, when we think about perfume, yes, smells, but so much of it is it to do with the person attached to it, the branding. I suppose with Chanel number five, very famously, Marilyn Monroe was, what do you wear in bed? I wear Chanel number five.
They've been,
you know, lots of people have been associated with
that.
They've
been really clever with their branding. Yeah, exactly. Brad Pitt. I mean, how revolutionary was that? A man, yeah, it's been traditionally associated as a woman's fragrance, and then having a man as the face of that fragrance was, so they're very clever. I mean, they are brilliant. It's kind of a masterclass in how to promote yourself without promoting yourself. It's just, yeah, we happen to be this cool. all the time, and it's not gaudy. The bottle has barely changed. Sometimes they do slightly different variations of it, but it's one of the most instantly, even just the silhouette of it, most people could recognise that's a Chanel No. 5.
Yeah, exactly. Just the bottle shape. It is that simplicity that just doesn't date, isn't it? It's the simplicity, nothing fancy about it. It's just a number. It's the type font.
Which is so Chanel, you know, that was so her style. She didn't want loads of gaudy things on her bottle. She wanted it to reflect the simplicity, the sort of more masculine tailoring of her clothes.
What I love about it, it's so interesting. It is like smelling history. Yeah. It is like you say, I'm very familiar with Chanel No. 5 because I've, you know, relatives. Yeah. There was always a bottle of Chanel No. 5 in my mum's house, I think, and my grandmother's house. And it was just, it's such a kind of, you can't imagine a world without it. I don't wear perfume. I do have a bottle of aftershave, which is about 15 years old. I smell of leather and petrol. Mainly. Well, I always did when I was at university because I still ride a motorcycle. So there's always that.
Well, they are very popular smells within fragrance, actually. You have a lot of, there's lots of fragrances that are kind of for petrol heads that are aimed at.
I don't want a smell of leather and petrol.
No. Okay, we'll find you a fragrance.
Find me
I'm determined to find you and Freddie.
Get Freddie off his thing.
We'll wean him off.
What's my, it's called, what the heck's it called? A molecule, it's called.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, molecule.
Molecule O1, it's called.
Yeah, eccentric molecule.
Yeah,
so that was revolutionary as well.
It was given to me. Why? I'm revolutionary. Oh, nice.
You are, yeah. Why so is that is nice? One ingredient, and it's ISO-E Super, which was an ingredient that was discovered in the 1970s. Again, completely synthetic.
Awesome.
And some people can't smell it. So some people are anosmic, as we call it. If you can't smell something, you're anosmic because it's a large molecule. And some people can't, a lot of musks are large molecules as well. So some people can't smell a lot of musks without realizing it. So you might be able to smell your fragrance and someone else wouldn't be able to smell it. Or you might be putting loads of it on and someone would go, oh my God, how much fragrance are you wearing?
It doesn't really smell very much. I mean, I alternate obviously between leather petrol, molecule and squirrel anus. Depends on my mood.
You're a man of diverse taste.
Hey, listen, I want to just before we go, I've got to plug your podcast because it's so good.
You.
Honestly, it's such a fascinating subject, and I'm so happy that we've cross-pollinated and you've come on my podcast.
Yes,
On the too. Scent is Susie's podcast, and you
it
talk
is.
About history, you talk about the chemistry, you talk about different fragrances. What else?
Yeah, and we just wanted to do it in a really unsnobby way, I think.
It's great. It's exactly
good.
What it is.
Yeah, we do perfume prescriptions for people, so we'll do you and Freddie on the show.
That'd
I think.
Be nice. That would be great. And listen, will you come back on, Susie, and we'll think of another invention, a perfume related invention, and then we'll get you on. We'll get you
there's
on.
Loads.
And yeah, so get thinking.
I will.
I love this subject. Oh, I tell you what, I had a meeting with someone who did perfume branding for hotels. So
amazing. Yeah, so that's a really cool
subject.
It
was really interesting.
It's a huge business as well, that sort of branding, that smell branding. And again, it's really subliminal, but it would be really noticeable if you walked into your favourite, you know, whatever, 5-star hotel, as I'm sure we all do
all the time.
Your regular suite. And it didn't smell as usual because, as we said, right at the beginning, these things are it bypasses logic, it goes straight to your memories and emotions, and you do it without thinking about it all the time.
And on that floral note, we shall say cheerio. Susie, thank you so much. Don't forget,
thank you.
On the Scent is Susie's podcast. Have a listen to that. And Susie, come back on the show anytime and let us continue. Thank you. So that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for your company as ever. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a rating and a review and tweet about it and whatever. It helps others discover the show, and it's always very nice to hear from you. Don't forget, do get in touch if you've got ideas for the show. We always love hearing your ideas and we try and feature as many as we can. Next time, I'm going to be continuing our little mini-series on the invention of forensics with an episode all about the birth of fingerprinting, which is absolutely fascinating. If you think the idea of fingerprinting has been relegated to Agatha Christie novels, think again. We use fingerprinting to open our phones and when we're in the queue at customs at airports. It's a really fascinating story that goes way back, begins in India, and I'd love your company for that one too.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
While I still have you, very briefly, if you fancy getting all of the History Hit podcast archive and new episodes ad-free, along with hundreds of history documentaries to watch, download our app across Apple App Store, Google Play, and smart TV platforms. Follow the link in the show notes or go to historyhit.com/subscribe. There is thousands of hours of history on there, including a documentary on science in the Middle Ages with Seb Volk, and also one with me talking about the secret history of the space race. As a patented listener, you get a special gift if you use the code Patented at the checkout. You get 50% off your first 3 months. That's Patented for 50% off your first 3 months. And if you're an Apple listener, you can subscribe for new ad-free podcast episodes within the Apple app.